This passage is taken from Mark chapter 5, verses 1 to 20. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for you are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go with them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in total, rushed down the steep bank and into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons, sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis about how much Jesus had done so much for him. And all the people were amazed.
Thanks, Adam. Jesus has the ultimate authority. Jesus has the ultimate authority because Jesus is God. In Matthew 28, verse 18, Jesus says, "All authority in heaven and on earth is given to me." In Ephesians 1, verse 22, we're told that God has placed all things under the feet of Jesus, that Jesus is the head of the church because Jesus has the authority. And in the encounter today that we see with Jesus, what we see demonstrated is that Jesus has the authority. In fact, Mark shows us in four things that happen right next to one another that Jesus has the ultimate authority. The first is in Mark chapter 4 from verse 35 through to the end of the chapter, where Jesus restores calm to the stormy sea, showing us that Jesus has the authority over everything in creation because Jesus was with God in the beginning, and therefore Jesus has authority over all of creation. The second thing is straight after that, Mark 5, 1 to 20, which Adam just read for us, where we see that Jesus restores a right mind to a man who is possessed by demons, showing us that Jesus has the authority over all spiritual powers and principalities. As it says at the end of Philippians chapter 2, one day every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Jesus has authority over all spiritual powers. Thirdly, straight after that, Jesus restores wholeness to a woman who's been bleeding for 12 years of her life, showing us that Jesus has the authority over who can come before God. No wonder, no longer would she be labeled as unclean and impure. No longer would she be a castaway, but she was able to come to Jesus because in that encounter with Jesus, we see that Jesus has the authority over who comes before God. Because as Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And then straight after that, we see that Jesus restores life to a girl who has died. showing us that Jesus has the authority over life and death, which we later see on his crucifixion. And the third day when Jesus is raised to life again, that Jesus has the authority over life and death. What Mark is trying to show us here is that Jesus has the ultimate authority over everything in life and death. Everything in earth and heaven, all spiritual powers, everything will come under Jesus because Jesus has ultimate authority. And so whatever you're going through in life right now, know that Jesus has the ultimate authority. He has the final word. Jesus has the ultimate authority over everything in your life right now. But are you giving him the permission to have that authority? I think all of us laughed a little bit, didn't we, earlier on in the year when we saw the video footage from Handforth Parish Council. Just in case you didn't see it, I'll remind you what happened. Allegedly, there'd been some bullying happening in that parish council, and so Cheshire County Council sent somebody in with authority to oversee that meeting and to run that meeting. Her name famously is Jackie Weaver. And she turns up to the meeting on Zoom, and in the meeting, it descends into chaos. Thankfully, our elders' meetings have not been anything like that online. But this meeting descends into chaos with this lady who's been sent in there. And the chair of the parish council, who I read on the news this week, has just stepped down. He famously shouted at her, "Jackie Weaver, you have no authority." At which she clicks a button and demonstrates her authority as she kicks him out of the meeting, along with two others of his colleagues. Jackie Weaver was sent with the authority. She had the authority and she kicked people out of the meeting. In this encounter with Jesus, Jesus demonstrates his authority as he kicks out not just one, but a whole legion, many demons out of this man. 3 points for us this morning. If you've not got the first one yet, it's this: Jesus has the authority. The second is that Jesus comes to heal and to restore. And the third is that Jesus has a greater purpose. Firstly, Jesus has the authority. Let's just remind ourselves of what happens in these first few verses. From verse 1, they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. At first reading, this is an encounter between Jesus and a man who is possessed by demons. But as we've seen throughout this series, there is so often more going on with what Jesus is doing and saying and demonstrating. What we see here is, for the first time in Mark's gospel, Jesus is no longer ministering in Jewish territory. He's no longer ministering among the Jews, but Jesus has got on a boat. He's traveled to the Gerasenes and to the Decapolis, the 10 cities, 10 Greek cities under Roman rule. This is no longer Jewish territory, but this is Gentile territory. Not only do we see that, but we see that where Jesus is near the place of the tombs, for that's where the man comes from. A place that would have been unclean for the Jews for fear of stepping on any of the tombs and becoming ceremonially unclean. We also know from later on in the passage that there's some pigs in the area, not just one or two pigs. There's at least 2,000 pigs, if not more. So for the Jews, this area was unclean, defiled, off-limits territory for any devout Jew who was bothered about their ceremonial cleanliness. And yet it's here that Jesus encounters the man who's possessed by demons. But Jesus goes to this unclean place to minister. Are there places in your life that you feel are spiritually unclean, spiritually dead, too dark, too far gone? John 1 verse 5 says, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." Are there places that you consider spiritually dead? Too far gone, too secular, too dark. Do you believe that Jesus, the light of the world, can inhabit those places and transform those places? I do, because Jesus has the authority. Jesus, the light of the world, can and will inhabit those dark places and shine his light and bring about transformation and restoration and healing. And what's more, Jesus, the light of the world, says to you and to I, you are the light of the world. Sometimes Jesus will call us into the dark places, to go to the places that we may feel are impure or unclean or dirty, the places we don't want to go to, because Jesus' light is greater than the darkness. And he calls us to shine that light. In Luke chapter 10, Jesus sends his disciples out. And in verse 3, he says, "Go, I am sending you out like sheep among the wolves." Jesus doesn't just send us to the nice, middle-class, comfortable places of our lives. Sometimes Jesus will send us to the places that we consider dark or impure or unclean in order to shine his light. And he sends us with his authority. Later in Luke 10, in verse 19, Jesus says, "See, I'm sending you out. You'll be able to step on scorpions and snakes and not be bitten." You see, Jesus sends us with his authority, but don't go if he's not asked you. Don't go if Jesus hasn't got the ultimate authority in your life. Jesus sends us into the dark world to be the light of the world, to carry his authority into the world, to pray and see people healed, to pray and see the darkness pushed back by the light of Jesus. So does Jesus have ultimate authority in your life? Do you believe that nowhere is off limits to Jesus? Do you believe that he can change the dark places of your life, of your mind, of your community, of your family, of the city? Do you believe Jesus has the authority to change these places? Does Jesus have ultimate authority in your life? Maybe actually you do love Jesus. Maybe you are part of the church. Maybe Jesus is the focus of who you're about. But maybe really he is more of a church Sunday thing. You can go to Jesus if that's the case. Make him Lord of your life and give him the authority in your life. There's no shame if Jesus hasn't got the authority in your life right now. You can still come to Jesus. We know this because we see this in the man. Let's take a look at the man's life. You know, the man likely wasn't a believer in the God of Israel simply because he lives in the Decapolis, the Greek-Roman cities, to Gentile area. He lives in the place of the tombs, a place of literal death. He's possessed by demons who want to bring about spiritual death. He's strong and he's violent. We're told that he's broken the shackles, the chains on his hands, the irons on his feet. Maybe the broken chains are still hanging from him. We later read that when Jesus restores him and heals him, that he's clothed in his right mind, which tells us right now he's crazy and naked. And he runs to Jesus and he encounters Jesus. And Jesus encounters him. No matter what life looks like, you're welcome to run to Jesus, and he will encounter you. And as you offer yourself to him, you will encounter Jesus. And you can ask him to have the ultimate authority in your life. Jesus has the authority. Second thing this morning, Jesus comes to heal and to restore. My name is Lee. It's a short name. There's three letters in my name. Two of them are the same. I was probably one of the first people in my school that could write my name. In fact, you can make the first letter look like a big E as well, so it looks like a big scribble. The great thing with having a short name is it can't be made any longer and it can't be made any shorter. I'm married to Becky, which is short for Rebecca. She hates being called Rebecca. No one ever calls her Rebecca apart from when she ever does something wrong. But of course, she never does anything wrong, so she never gets called it. If you've got a short name like me, though, if you were ever in trouble in school, I'm sure you're going to find this hard to believe, people would have to use my full name because Lee couldn't be lengthened in any way. So it's like if you're sat here today and you're here and in all reality, you've been dozing off and you've not really been listening, Aaron John Waters, and someone uses your full name, it catches your attention. It's kind of like someone is saying, "I know some stuff about you, therefore I have some authority here. I know about you. I know your full name. I know some stuff about your life. Maybe I know your mother, and therefore you'd better listen to me, otherwise I'll tell her what you've been doing." That when someone uses your elongated name or your full name, it's as if they're trying to in some way say, I know something about you, therefore I'm going to get some authority over you so that you will do as you're supposed to do. Our series, Encounters with Jesus, has looked at how Jesus has encountered people and people have encountered Jesus. But what we begin to see now in this passage is Jesus and a demon having an encounter. And in verses 6 and 7, we read this. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. That's the man. Now in verse 7, we see the demon. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" Straight away, the demon knows who Jesus is. And the demon knows that Jesus has the authority. We know this as well. James chapter 2 verse 19 tells us that the demons believe in God. The demon knows who Jesus is. The demon begs and pleads for mercy because he knows that Jesus has the authority. The demon, it knows that its end is torture and death. And so the demon addresses Jesus as who he is, Son of the Most High God. The demon uses the full title of who Jesus is. It's almost as if the demon is trying to gain some authority over Jesus in some way here. Mark chapter 9 is really the watershed in Mark's gospel. It's the moment where Peter declares Jesus is the Messiah when Jesus asks, "Who do people say I am?" So at this point in Mark's gospel, it's as if the demon is saying, these people that have come with you on the boat, Jesus, these people who are around here, they don't really know who you are, but I know who you are, Jesus, Son of the Most High God. It's as if the demon's trying to have something over Jesus. But what we see is Jesus respond in two ways. The first thing Jesus does is he commands the demon to come out of the man. Why does he do that? Well, there's two reasons in that, really. Firstly, because Jesus' heart is for people. For the restoration of people. No longer should this man be tortured by these demons. So Jesus tells the demon to come out, and what he does is he disarms the power of the demon. The demons tried to get some power over Jesus, but Jesus commands the demon to come out. He disarms the power of the demon, who no longer has a host to be able to do things in and through. And then secondly, Jesus interacts. Jesus asks a question. What is your name? But notice how the demon replies. The demon replies, Legion. The demon's name wasn't Legion. Legion described a number. In fact, Legion was a Roman military term. If a Roman army was going out into battle and the commander called for Legion, Legion was a set number of chariots, horses, and foot soldiers. This man isn't possessed by a demon, but a whole army of them. Yet in one word of Jesus, they all come out of him. What does this show us? That Jesus has the authority, but also that Jesus came to heal and to restore. Jesus casts the demon out of the man. He heals him. But later in verse 19, we see that Jesus restores him. He sends the man home. The demons and Satan, what they want to do is to control, but Jesus came to bring freedom. When Jesus died upon the cross, he disarmed the power of sin and of the enemy. And when he rose on the third day, Jesus destroyed the power of death, meaning we have freedom and the gift of eternal life when we trust in Jesus. The demons wanted to control, but Jesus came to bring freedom. Remember where this man was? He was in the tombs, he'd been chained, he was naked. What does Jesus do? All three of those things are changed. Jesus restores his life, he sets him free, and he clothes him with righteousness. Where do you need Jesus to heal you or restore you today? Jesus will do both, but sometimes we accept one and forget about the other. Maybe today Jesus needs to restore something in your life. Maybe it's a broken relationship. Maybe it's finances. Maybe it's a position. Maybe it's work. Maybe some restoration needs to happen in your life. Jesus might do that for you, but also allow him to do the inner healing that he needs to do that comes with that. Sometimes that can take longer. Or maybe you may find that Jesus will heal you. He'll do some inner work in you, some deeper work in you, but it will take a bit longer for him to restore you to the things that you used to do, the things that you used to be involved in, or to what Jesus has for you. Patiently allow Jesus to minister in you. Give him the authority to do in your life what he wants to do, because Jesus heals and restores. The peace that came upon the sea at the word of Jesus in chapter 4, verse 39, is the same peace that comes upon the man here. It's the same peace that comes upon the woman who has been bleeding. It's the same peace that comes upon the dead girl's father and family as she's raised to life. Jesus, the Prince of Peace, can speak and bring peace into any situation, any broken, chaotic, or dark situation of your life. Jesus, the Prince of Peace, can bring his peace because Jesus has the authority and Jesus came to heal and to restore. Finally, Jesus has a greater purpose. Towards the end of the passage, in verses 16 onwards, we read, "Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region." One of the things I used to love when I worked for Youth for Christ was traveling to different cities across the country and seeing what was happening there in youth work and youth ministry and churches. I used to love being able to be a tiny little part of that. I used to love being able to travel by train to all these different places. I missed that. One of the cities I used to quite like going to was Glasgow, but it was a long way to get there. And there was this one particular day I had to go up to Glasgow for a meeting. It wasn't going to be the easiest of meetings. And so I was up early. I was on the train at Lime Street, change at Wigan, all the way up to Glasgow Central. It was a 4.5-hour train journey. I got some coffee for myself and my colleague, and we went to this meeting. And to surprise all of us, the meeting was a lot shorter than any of us expected. So the meeting finished, and because of the kind of train ticket I had, it meant that I could jump on a train that was leaving in the next half hour, or I'd be waiting a long time before the next train. And so naturally, I ran as fast as I could, and I jumped on the train back to Wigan, back to Liverpool, 4.5 hours later, I'm back home. 9 hours I traveled for a meeting that was less than 1 hour. Isn't that crazy? The disciples that are following Jesus, young Jewish men, they were likely living in the same kind of area they'd been brought up in, Jewish territory, surrounded by extended family and friends. They were fishermen, they were tax collectors, they knew their trade, they knew what they were doing, they were in comfort. They follow Jesus, which is a huge, incredible, miraculous thing. Jesus says to them, "Guys, we're going on a trip today, will you get on the boat?" They get on the boat, the fishermen are like, "We know what we're doing here." But then we're told in chapter 4 that the disciples thought they were going to drown because the storm was that bad. They risked their life getting to where they get to. You know, I'd have loved to have been a fly on the wall here. I'd have loved to have overheard what the disciples had said at this moment. They've risked their lives. I mean, we've nearly died getting here. We've got here that Jesus spoke and the sea became calm. We're greeted by a crazy naked man with chains hanging from him. Jesus interacts with the demon. The demons come out and go into 2,000 pigs. Have you any idea what 2,000 pigs squealing is going to sound like? How long it would take for them to run down a hill and into the water? The pigs drown. The people are terrified. And we're going home? Like, we didn't even eat. Did Jesus really risk the disciples' lives just for the sake of one man? Yes, of course he did. Because Jesus knows our every situation. He cares for you. He knows your deepest needs, and he will meet with you and minister within you and through you. And Jesus doesn't just treat our symptoms. He heals us and restores us. So did Jesus really risk the life of the disciples for the sake of one man? No, of course he didn't. Because Jesus has a greater purpose. And we've seen this woven throughout the text. The fact that Jesus goes to the Decapolis, a foreign region. The fact that Jesus is in an unclean and impure place. The fact that Jesus has demonstrated that this man in the mess of who what his life has become is able to come to Jesus, and Jesus accepts him and heals him and restores him. Even in the pigs running down the hillside, you know, the Jews would have been delighted about this. You know, a Messiah who gets rid of pigs, fantastic, it's unclean. But also the Roman connotation of legion being defeated. The Jews wanted their Messiah to defeat the Roman powers that were overthrowing them. It's a picture of the authority Jesus has over every dominion, every rule in earth and on heaven. It's a picture that Jesus came for all people, no matter race, ethnicity, background, situation. But the greater thing is this. The man is restored. He pleads with Jesus to go with him. And in verse 19, Jesus says to him, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." It's really interesting this, that Jesus responds differently to this man. Usually in the earlier part of the Gospels, when Jesus does a miracle in somebody's life, what Jesus says to them is, he sometimes says, you know, go to the priest or go and wash or whatever it may be. But generally what Jesus says to people is, don't tell them that it was me that's done this. And what often happens is they follow him. But here Jesus says, do go and tell and don't follow me. Why does Jesus do this? Because through this encounter, Jesus has a greater purpose. Firstly, having been known as the crazy guy, when this man is in his right mind, dressed, eloquently speaking, he is a living testimony of what Jesus has done and who Jesus is. His life is a living testimony. Secondly, it's a picture, like we said, that the Gentiles can be restored in the kingdom. And then the third reason is what we see in Mark chapter 7 from verse 31. Why don't you join me there? Mark chapter 7 from verse 31, we read, "Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis. There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hand on him." How is it that the people that begged Jesus to leave are now begging him to place his hands on someone? How did these people know about Jesus when Jesus stepped off a boat, healed someone, and stepped back on a boat and went away again? How do the people in this region know that they can bring someone to this man, Jesus, and he will heal and restore them? How? Surely it's the testimony of this man. Surely it's the testimony of this man. Jesus has a greater purpose. Just like we saw a few weeks ago with the woman at the well, Jesus uses those who are seemingly the least capable of doing it to share his precious message with the world around. Are you going through a hard time at the moment? Jesus has the ultimate authority. But do you need to come to Jesus and give him permission to have ultimate authority in your life? Do you feel written off or excluded? Do you feel that you need to hide away, just like that man needed to hide away in the tombs? Jesus will welcome you when you come towards him. Do you need healing and restoration in your life today? Because Jesus can heal you and restore you. It may take time, it may be painful, but allow Jesus in his authority to do that. And know that Jesus has a greater purpose for what is going on in your life right now. We may go through the hard times, but Jesus will work in you or through you to change you or to change those around you for the sake of the kingdom. Why? Because Jesus has the ultimate authority. As we close, I want to read some words from the letter to the Ephesians, a prayer that Paul writes to the church in Ephesus that I want to be our prayer for us here today. Ephesians chapter 1 from verse 18. "I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realms, far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, and every name that is invoked, not only in the present age, but also in the one to come. And God placed all things under his feet and appointed him to be head over everything for the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills everything in every way. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this encounter between Jesus and the man possessed by a legion of demons. Lord, we thank you that you have given your son Jesus all authority and that he is the head of us, your church, his body. Thank you that we can come to you. Lord, we give you the authority in this church and in our lives once again. We thank you for your amazing grace, that you accept us and you heal us and you restore us. And thank you for the greater purpose that you have to work out in our lives. Jesus, you have the authority and we love you. Amen.